All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. I mean, I think that the reality is that the ultimate OCD hack is that intrusive thoughts and the anxiety that they cause follow the leadership of behavioral choices. The trouble that most individuals have is that they don't follow that yellow brick road far enough. They don't go long enough to really begin to see the result of fighting the compulsive responses. And it's important to highlight that what I mean by behavioral choices is really behavioral patterns. I don't mean once and done, a choice in the moment. I mean choices that over time equal patterns, habits, because you'll recall, according to the cognitive model, that it's the patterns that reinforce the thoughts and the feelings that we have in the situations that we face. And in forging new patterns, by making different choices in the day-to-day, by forging new patterns, that's how we're beginning to create the way for new thoughts and feelings and starve the old ones. The trouble that most people have is they get intimidated. You know, it's like it's this malfunctioning alarm, and it goes off and it starts screaming at you when nothing is necessarily objectively wrong. That's the nature of clinically significant anxiety and OCD. We start experiencing intrusive thoughts and having high levels of anxiety even when there's nothing objectively dangerous happening. And what most people do when they're following that yellow brick road is eventually they'll deviate. Now, of course, nobody's perfect, but what I mean to say is eventually they'll sort of permanently deviate from the pathway of working hard to identify and stop compulsions in the everyday moment. And that's because, going back to that analogy of the mosquito bite, when you stop scratching the mosquito bite, what happens, everyone knows, is that the itch becomes more prevalent. You become more aware of the discomfort that was being managed, you could say, with the scratching response. And when you work to stop scratching, that's when you notice a higher level of discomfort. And the same is true for individuals with anxiety symptoms. When they work hard to begin identifying and stopping compulsive responses, that's when the alarm system really ramps up and we begin noticing we're having higher levels of intrusive thoughts and greater levels of anxiety, and the alarm level has gone from 2 to 3 or from 3 to 4, and things are really, really serious now, and you should deviate course. You should really consider being more careful here. Maybe you should do some compulsions, maybe just some minor ones. I think you're being irresponsible. You know, it's this kind of idea where individuals will eventually deviate. They'll eventually sort of buckle under the psychoemotive pressure and deviate course. They'll begin engaging compulsions again. This is what I mean when I say individuals don't follow the yellow brick road far enough. Because what happens when they follow it far enough is, well, the mosquito bite begins to itch a little bit less, and the comfort level seems to increase. They stop being so aware, so very cognizant of the discomfort that seems to occupy every waking moment. But when they work to stop that response for long enough, and admittedly, in the meantime, it's really, really uncomfortable. But eventually what happens is things start to calm down. And the same is true with the OCD and the anxiety. What happens eventually is the intrusive thought frequency decreases, and the anxiety that is caused starts to feel a little bit less intense. But it's a matter of fighting through long enough, focusing your energy, focusing your attention, focusing your action in a technical and precise manner on identifying and stopping compulsions, not on trying to manage the anxiety. Remember, the moment you're focused on trying to manage the anxiety and the thoughts that cause it, as much sense as that makes, and no one's contesting that, of course, that sort of reaction is understandable, and we all gravitate sometimes back to that reflex. But the moment you start focusing your priority on managing your level of discomfort, you're primed. You're already set up to engage the compulsion. Whatever it is that you do next in the way of trying to manage the anxiety, trying to somehow take the edge off of the discomfort, whatever it is that you're doing toward that end falls directly into the definitional parameter of compulsion. And so part of how individuals don't go far enough is they eventually deviate. And part of what I mean when I say they're not going far enough is this idea that they'll begin engaging compulsions again without realizing. And this might look like the classic macro compulsion where individuals are engaging stereotypic, time-consuming, I might say kind of obvious compulsions, but they don't realize that what they're doing is compulsive. I can't tell you the number of times that I've had a conversation with someone about, for example, seeking reassurance or researching. And these behaviors may happen quite frequently throughout their day and may, in fact, occupy a significant amount of time, but it's not quite obvious to them that what they're doing is, in fact, compulsive. And so what that means is they keep on engaging that compulsion, even though they've worked fairly hard to that point at stopping compulsions. This other one pops up somewhere else, and they don't quite identify it as compulsive. And this is particularly the case when we're looking at something like micro compulsions. That is to say, these kind of behaviors that are subtle, that sometimes might be even invisible to other people, like clenching a jaw or maybe biting the inside of a cheek. It might be something like picking at cuticles or fingers or fingernails, bouncing a knee or a leg, whatever it is, behaviors that, again, are pretty subtle. And individuals will often say, in my experience, very, very typically, when we're talking about something like a micro compulsion, they'll say, well, that's not really part of my OCD. That's just something I do when I'm nervous. You know what I'm saying? So let's look at that behavior. And would we say that we're doing that somewhat repetitively? Well, yeah. Would we say that we're doing that for the purpose of trying to manage anxiety? And some people here might say, well, no, I'm not really doing it to manage my anxiety. But I might say, well, okay, let me ask a different question. Would you say that you're doing it to try and express your anxiety? Would you say that you're in some way trying to like separate yourself a bit from it, or trying to somehow take the edge off of it? And for most people, the answer to that question will be, well, yeah, I think so. And I might say, well, it sounds to me like the term express is sort of synonymous with the term manage, even though we're not using the term manage and we don't really think of it that way. We would say that we're engaging these behaviors to express our anxiety with the kind of subtle hope of feeling a little bit better in that process. And so we would say that, well, that micro compulsion still meets the definition of compulsion, even though you've been doing this behavior a long, long time. And in fact, you've always done it or whatever. And it's really, really subtle. And it certainly doesn't fall within what we might consider a stereotype of compulsive behavior. It nevertheless, again, I think we could say is compulsive. And my point is that often people don't notice. Often people are engaging compulsions without recognizing, in fact, that they're doing compulsions. Another way that this tends to happen is as people get better, and I've seen this countless times in therapy. In fact, I consider sort of that game, what's the game? Whack-a-mole, right? You sort of stop one compulsion and another one pops up somewhere else, and you work to stop that compulsion and another one pops up somewhere else. And again, to my mind, that's actually indicative of progress, even though for the OCDer in the moment, that can be pretty discouraging. And like, why is this happening? I'm really working. Why am I not getting better? And I would say, dude, you are getting better. You are making gains. That's why the OCD is shifting. That is why it's doing it. Because what you're doing is working. Why would it bother shifting if what it was doing was working just fine? No, instead the idea becomes it's having to figure out some alternative strategy because you've shut and locked and bolted the door. It can't get in that way. So it has to find another way. Sometimes this will look like intrusive thoughts and subtypes shift right under your feet. Sometimes it'll look like, well, I'm not doing this compulsion, but I ended up doing that one instead, or I've locked down these, but I didn't realize that one over there was a compulsion. But the punchline of it, keep your finger on this, is that intrusive thoughts and the anxiety that they cause follow the leadership of compulsions. And also keep your finger on this, OCD doesn't give a shit if you understand or you don't understand the nature of compulsive behavior, the definition, you could say, of compulsive choices. You know, it just wants to eat. It doesn't care that you don't fully understand the game. And this isn't quite fair, you know. It's not interested in fairness. It's interested in taking over. And your engagement of compulsions, whether you realize the behavior is compulsive or you don't realize the behavior is compulsive, and therefore you buckle under the pressure and fall back to the sort of familiar patterns of engaging compulsions. Again, it doesn't care why you're engaging compulsions. It just wants you to do that. And so when I say that the problem for most people is they don't go far enough, they don't fight and endure long enough, the result of that is they don't experience and see the benefit, the fruit of that labor. So in order to make meaningful progress with OCD and anxiety-related disorders, it's not just about working to stop a compulsion in a given moment. It's not even about working to stop a certain behavioral pattern. Because again, like, OCD's got a second string and a third string, and OCD's running deep, man. Like, it's got a lot to throw at you. And you've got to be up to the challenge intellectually as well as behaviorally to identifying these behaviors as compulsive and working really hard, enduring over the long run to stop these compulsions in order to make progress. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.